Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Dinosaurs are everywhere, from horror movies like Jurassic Park to sitcoms. So today we're going to talk about the arc of dinosaur history, from their evolution about 230 million years ago to the mass extinction event that killed them off. But what got me started on this topic was a New York Times article about extensive dinosaur bone beds in New Mexico, and our guest, Dr. Spencer Lucas, who is curator of geology and paleontology at the New Mexico Museum of Natural History, is a perfect person to talk to us about all of this. Spencer Lucas, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Spencer, I'd like to start with New Mexico, and I know you still go out in the field. So is one of the things that's enchanting about New Mexico is the ability to go out and find dinosaur bones various places?
Oh, yeah. New Mexico, I always say New Mexico's a mecca for paleontologists who are looking for dinosaurs. There are rocks that yield dinosaurs virtually all over the state.
Really? So, I mean, are there particular places to look or?
Right. Well, in northern New Mexico, basically, if you drew an east-west line through Albuquerque or Socorro, the San Juan Basin of northwestern New Mexico, the Chama Basin in north-central New Mexico, and then what we call the Tucumcari Basin in eastern New Mexico, those are real hot spots to look for dinosaurs in.
So you mentioned this is a good place for paleontologists to look, but what about like rank amateurs who think they know something about dinosaurs? Can they go out and kind of look around for dinosaur bones?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, in a state this big, the fact is that many important fossil discoveries are not being made by paleontologists. They're being made by just members of the local public, people who are out hiking, ranching, farming, whatever.
Could you give an example of something like that?
Well, one of the best examples, of course, is the discovery of Seismosaurus. Well, this is the giant Jurassic dinosaur. It was found near San Ysidro almost 30 years ago, and it was found by a couple of hikers from Albuquerque who were just out essentially nature hiking, and they ran into these giant vertebrae, the backbone of the dinosaur, and they knew enough about anatomy. They knew they'd found something unusual, and then they took it to professional paleontologists, and ultimately it was excavated. And now you can go see it at the Natural History Museum on exhibit.
So they weren't looking for dinosaur bones, and they didn't know anything particular about dinosaurs. They just happened to cross. Now, how can that be? How can all of a sudden dinosaur bones appear?
Well, they appear. Yeah, I mean, they weren't looking for dinosaurs, and they probably didn't know a lot about dinosaurs. But of course, you know, one of the things about New Mexico is we have a tremendous amount of exposed rock on the land surface because it's so dry. And that rock is always eroding. And that's where the fossils are. They erode out of the rock. So the process of erosion is continually uncovering fossils. I almost say it's like a new crop of fossils is out there to be harvested every year.
Really? Well, I'd like to go back to the New York Times article then that started me on this. And there was a recent find of a dinosaur from a bone bed near Ghost Ranch. And this was supposedly of a dinosaur that was about 215 million years old. And I'd like to, first of all, is that the dinosaur bed that's sort of famous that's been around for like 100 years?
No, actually, that dinosaur that was discovered from Ghost Ranch came from a slightly older dinosaur bed. At Ghost Ranch proper, there's a dinosaur bed that's really closer to 205 million. And it's from that bed that Coelophysis, which is New Mexico state fossil, comes. And that's really one of the best known Triassic dinosaurs. That dinosaur locality is known worldwide by paleontologists and dinosaur enthusiasts. Now, the newer report is of a somewhat older bone bed and a new kind of Triassic dinosaur that had never been seen by science until its discovery just in the last year or so.
And what is it about that find that makes it different than what was known before?
Well, of course, anatomically, it's a distinctive type of animal. It has a different anatomy than other known dinosaurs. And that new anatomy shows us, well, you know, right off, that there are just all sorts of new animals waiting to be discovered, particularly in the Triassic, which is the time period when dinosaurs first appear and when they're undergoing their first 20 or 30 million years of evolution. And we really, and I mean we as paleontologists, are really pretty ignorant about early dinosaurs. We don't know that many of them, and so any new one that comes up is an important discovery.
You know, most of us have heard that there was an extinction event that killed off the dinosaurs. But I don't know how many people know there was an extinction event that preceded the dinosaurs. And from my reading, this was the biggest extinction event ever.
Right. This is the extinction that occurs at the beginning of the Triassic. It occurred about 250 million years ago. And so it precedes the appearance of dinosaurs, and it's considered the biggest extinction of all Earth history. And by that, I mean that it's estimated that perhaps as many as 90% of the species that lived in the oceans disappeared. It may be as much as 60% of life on land disappeared at that extinction. So it was an extremely catastrophic event.
And how, first of all, do we know what caused that extinction?
That's a good question. There's been a lot of discussion of what might have caused such a big extinction, and I think now it's fair to say that many scientists agree that a huge series of volcanic eruptions in what's now Siberia were definitely involved in those extinctions. And how they caused it and what exactly went on is still being investigated, but I'd say there's a consensus building that this extreme amount of volcanism in what's now Siberia is what caused that extinction.
And why? How would that relate to this killing off of marine species?
Well, when you throw, when the volcanoes erupt massively, you're going to put up a lot of ash. You're going to change the chemistry of the world's ocean. This ash is going to fall. Other types of gases that come out of the volcanoes may ultimately land on the ocean surface. And this causes a change in water chemistry that can be have a very negative impact on life in the seas.
Now, I've also read that somehow this extinction event sort of set the plate for the evolution of dinosaurs, and I guess I'm not quite sure why that would be true.
Well, it could have. I know people have advocated that. I'm not sure I would agree with that, because you have to remember it's preceding the appearance of dinosaurs by at least 20 million years. So it certainly reset the plate and all, but there were plenty of reptiles and amphibians living on land by the time dinosaurs appeared. So you have to wonder, is it really directly connected to dinosaurs? Maybe there is a long-term connection there, but I don't think that's well established.
To tell you the truth, I'm not quite sure the difference between reptiles, lizards, and dinosaurs.
Well, dinosaurs are, traditionally are a type of reptile. They're a kind of reptile, and they're really distinguished by the fact that their limbs were held nearly under the body so that they walked in what we would call the upright posture. That's the posture we see of in things like dogs and cats, ourselves, horses. And that's very different from what we call the sprawling posture that we see in other reptiles like lizards and turtles and animals like that. There the limbs are held out horizontal, essentially, to the ground. They're held out away from the body. So a dinosaur can very easily be defined. The simple definition is to say it's a reptile with an upright limb posture.
I see. So it is a reptile.
Well, it's a reptile in one sense, and in another sense, since dinosaurs are thought by many to be the ancestors of birds, some people have argued we should just consider them birds without feathers, birds that didn't fly. There are animals that are sort of at the junction of birds and reptiles.
Yeah, and speaking of this juncture, another thing I read was that during this period, sort of the ancestors of mammals start to be seen, and they're lizard-like.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the ancestry of mammals goes way back. It goes back to even before the major extinction at the beginning of the Triassic. But there were plenty some people call them mammal-like reptiles. They were reptiles that were on their way to being mammals or cousins, but they were very much reptiles. And it's often forgotten that mammals and dinosaurs appear in the fossil record almost exactly at the same time.
So what made these things mammal-like?
Well, they had structures of the skull and particularly of the ear region that were approaching the unique structures that we see in mammals. More interesting questions that are harder to answer, of course, is, today we look at mammals as hairy, as giving live birth, as suckling their young, and those kinds of things are very hard to infer for the fossil record. So we don't, as paleontologists, we try to rely more on the skeletal features that we think are unique to mammals and that we tend to see in some of these reptiles.
Let's go back to dinosaurs. Can you sort of paint a picture, say, of New Mexico during the Triassic period? Where is it and what's it like during this period?
Right. New Mexico, during the later part of the Triassic, when dinosaurs are first appearing, is part of the amalgamated continents. They've all come together to form what we call a supercontinent. It's called Pangaea. New Mexico is essentially equatorial. It's very, maybe a little bit north of the equator, but it's much lower latitude than today. It's near the western shore of Pangaea, of the supercontinent. And it's an area of really tropical lowland forests. So it was probably a land that was very close to sea level. It was covered with dense vegetation and huge rivers. And when I say huge, I mean rivers the size of the modern Mississippi flowed through New Mexico, mostly coming from the east or southeast. They were flowing northwesterly and westerly towards the shoreline, which would have been about where the Utah-Nevada border is right now.
So if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and today I'm talking with Dr. Spencer Lucas, and we're talking about dinosaurs, extinction events, and fossil finds, dinosaur fossil finds in New Mexico. And one of the surprising things to me was that dinosaurs weren't really the top predator during this Triassic period, and it took yet another extinction event to, I guess, somehow allow them to become the top predator. Can you tell us a little bit about that next extinction event? For example, when was it?
Well, let me say this first. You never start at the top. I mean, you have to start somewhere. So dinosaurs had to start somewhere, and that somewhere means they started as fairly small animals. I mean, a big dinosaur in the Triassic was an animal that was 10 or maybe 12 feet long. Most dinosaurs were much smaller during the Triassic, and they started out as small predators.
But you're talking about Triassic is 50 million years, so they had some time to evolve, right?
They had some time, but, you know, they didn't do a lot. At least as far as the record we know, they weren't doing a heck of a lot for a few tens of millions of years. It's only near the end of the Triassic when you do have the first really big extinction or series of extinctions that affect the dinosaurs. And so I'm saying there were extinctions about 200 million years ago. So you got dinosaurs showing up, say 225, 230. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be doing a heck of a lot. They're just running around. They're small predators. And when I say small predators, I mean they're doing kind of unglamorous stuff like eating insects. You know, they're not doing anything.
They're not at the top of the food chain.
Yeah, they're not your movie dinosaurs.
Right.
Okay. And then you have these extinctions near the end of the Triassic. And that's saying, for some reason, that sets the stage for the Jurassic sort of diversification and proliferation of dinosaurs.
So that's the question. Like you say, for some reason, and so my unfair question to you is, what's the reason?
Well, you know what I like to say? We don't know the reason, but any good paleontologist can talk for hours about something he doesn't know about. And so we can talk around the reason. We know a couple of things happened around that time. We know there was another set of volcanic eruptions, fairly serious. These were in what's now the Atlantic Ocean Basin. And those eruptions definitely were driving some things to extinction. We know that some of the things that went extinct were large land-living predators, large reptiles and amphibians. So that may have opened up, some people have argued, that might have opened up some ecospace, some niches for dinosaurs to get into. And we also knew climates were changing. We know that the supercontinent was beginning to break up. There was a drying of climate going on. And so therefore, vegetation was changing. Habitats, landscapes were perhaps becoming a little less densely forested. And here you have dinosaurs who were remarkably good runners and walkers who may have led to their increased success, the creation of more open country environments.
But these guys are so big. It seems to me like the bigger you are, the more lush you would want the plants so that the big plant-eating dinosaurs could eat the plants so the big predators could eat the plant-eating dinosaurs.
Yeah, but imagine this scenario. You only really need it to be lush sort of around the river courses in sort of micro-environments and areas. So you're a big plant-eating dinosaur. You're hanging out along the riverbanks and in the jungles, the bosque, as we see it now. Look at New Mexico now. You've got one lush place, basically, for most of the state till you get in the mountains, and that's the Rio Grande Bosque, right? Mm-hmm. So you got all these big guys living down there. They're living it up, like you say, on plants and all that. Then you've got the meat eaters hanging around on the fringes of that and out in the prairies. And they're coming in and they're raiding and they're hitting these big these are like big refrigerators, these big, four-legged plant-eating dinosaurs. So that scenario you could envision, where I'm talking about.
And what's the reason to get bigger and bigger and bigger? I mean, these are gigantic How big are these things, these dinosaurs?
Well, the biggest ones get up, you know, you see a lot of kind of wild estimates. So I would say to you, what you can really conservatively verify is that you're getting animals that weigh 50 or 60 tons. And in total body lengths, you're getting body lengths probably up to maybe 120 feet.
How does that compare to, say, a whale?
Well, for a blue whale, it's not that big. Mm-hmm. But what I compare it to are elephants, and you get, okay, you know, you get half a dozen or a dozen elephants into one of these giant dinosaurs.
Wow.
Now, one thing I would say is there are some humongous things that are just known from single bones, and they may be even bigger than I told you. But since they're only known from single bones, they're not known from skeletons or parts of skeletons, it's hard to be sure how big they are. Now, to answer your question, though, why do these things get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger? And the answer is because they could. We don't know the answer. It's a fascinating problem. Why at this period in Earth history, and by that I mean the Jurassic, why at this time and this time alone do we get such big animals on land? Never since. The Cretaceous dinosaurs generally were smaller, and certainly no mammal has ever reached these kinds of gargantuan sizes. No bird. And it's a good question. Some of it has to do with the reptileness of these animals. Reptiles grow continuously throughout their lives. You know, if you've got a turtle, that turtle will keep growing as long as it lives. The rate of growth slows down, but it can grow throughout life. So dinosaurs grew throughout life. That helps you get bigger, especially if you live a long time. Things were warm. There must have been a lot of food. And, you know, it's like a non-answer answer. You know, they could.
Well, if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're talking with Dr. Spencer Lucas today, and he's the curator of geology and paleontology at the New Mexico Museum of Natural History. And we're talking about the history of dinosaurs, where you can find dinosaurs in New Mexico, dinosaur bones, that is, and we're talking about mass extinction events. Now, the next sort of period is called the Cretaceous period, and I guess one thing I don't quite understand is why it's a separate period. I mean, the other periods sort of start with a mass extinction event. This one doesn't seem to have a hard edge to it, but that's probably my ignorance. Is there some reason for this third period?
Well, no, you make a good point. I mean, there is not a big extinction at the beginning of the Cretaceous to mark it off. But nonetheless, when these time periods were originally defined in Europe, and that was back in the 1800s, there are distinct differences in the rocks and fossils that the geologists felt merited a different time period, and everyone's followed that since.
Now, we've talked about Pangaea, and it was one continent, basically, in the mm-hmm. Triassic. It starts to split apart a little bit in the Jurassic. What's going on with Pangaea during the Cretaceous period?
Well, by Cretaceous time, you know, what I always say is starting the Triassic, imagine Pangaea, one continent, everything pushed together, centered around the equator, and then one vast world ocean, which we call Panthalassa. It begins to really break apart. Technically, it's break apart really begins in the Triassic, but it gets really going in the Jurassic. And the key thing in breaking it apart is to create an Atlantic Ocean.
And what's happening with dinosaurs? Are they, you mentioned earlier, they're not really getting any bigger during this period, but are they, how are they doing? Are we getting different species? Are we getting changes in dinosaurs?
Yeah, dinosaurs are still going gangbusters in the Cretaceous, but they are changing significantly. And one reason for that could be that flowering plants first appear early in the Cretaceous. So this creates a whole new food source for all the plant-eating dinosaurs. So many of the dinosaurs you're familiar with are really Cretaceous dinosaurs, duck-billed dinosaurs, horned dinosaurs. These are animals that only are known from the Cretaceous. It's always been kind of funny to me and other paleontologists that you remember the movie Jurassic Park.
Right.
Most of the inhabitants of Jurassic Park were Cretaceous dinosaurs.
Like T-Rex, for example.
T-Rex is a good example. So, you know, it should have been called Cretaceous Park.
Tell me something about T-Rex. That's the one everybody wants to know about.
Well, T-Rex is the sort of the last of the great dinosaurian meat eaters. It's an animal that really doesn't appear until just a couple of million years before dinosaur extinction. It's part of a group of meat eaters called the Tyrannosaurids. So there are other relatives like Albertosaurus. We, as many of you know, we have a statue of Albertosaurus in front of the museum. But T-Rex is this enormous, it's this more than 40 foot long, several ton predator who runs around on its hind limbs, has tiny little hands arms. And don't ask me what those were for, because we don't know. Although I can talk, I'll talk for the rest of the show about it. We have no idea what T-Rex did with its arms. And presumably it was a horrific predator that killed with a slashing blow of its head. And if you ever look at the skull, we have a cast of one on display at the museum. You know, these huge blade-like teeth are literally the size of bananas. They're these enormous teeth. There's almost 100 of them in the mouth. And this animal was just a horrible, terrific predator near the very end of the age of dinosaurs.
So were some of these fossils found, like the ones you just mentioned, dinosaurs, were some of these found in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah. T-Rex is known for New Mexico. It's not known from a lot of bones. For example, there's a jaw of T-Rex that was found near Elephant Butte Reservoir down near TRC in Sierra County. And then I think most interestingly, the only footprints known of T-Rex are from New Mexico. They were found on the Philmont Boy Scout Ranch, which is near Raton in northeastern New Mexico. And then, of course, the other dinosaurs I mentioned, the duckbill dinosaurs, the horned dinosaurs, many fossils of them are known from around the state, particularly from the San Juan Basin from northwestern New Mexico near Farmington.
And if people want to look at the Museum of Natural History website, they can see examples of these dinosaurs, correct?
Absolutely. And, of course, when you come to the museum, we have fossils and artwork and whatnot that also explain these animals.
So at the end of this period, about 65 million years ago, we have yet another extinction event. And this seems to be the one that people at least claim to know something about. At least they seem to claim to know the cause of it. And what is the claimed cause?
Well, the consensus cause is the impact of either, you know, an asteroid or a huge meteorite with the Earth 65 million years ago. There's a few scientists who still want volcanic eruptions to do in the dinosaurs, but very few accept that. And there's very strong evidence in the Gulf of Mexico basin near Yucatan in Mexico of a huge crater that dates to just about exactly 65 million years. And this looks like the smoking gun for what got the dinosaurs.
So how big is this crater?
Oh, it's tens of miles across. I mean, it's been argued that the size of the object that hit the Earth was, you know, maybe 15 or 20 miles in diameter. One of the problems is we don't really understand exactly how it killed the dinosaurs. There have been arguments that it caused a terrific acid rain by throwing up all sorts of sulfur, elements and whatnot into
the
atmosphere.
Why would it do that? Why would it?
Well, because of where it hit on the ocean floor. There's a lot of gypsum there. In the Gulf of Mexico, it would have vaporized a lot of that. The favored argument back in the early 80s when this was first thought of, when the evidence for this was first seen, is that it caused something like what's been called a nuclear winter. It threw a lot of dust into the air, and that blocked out sunlight, and so things got very cold. You know, regardless of which mechanism you buy into, the fact is the evidence for the impact is compelling, and it seems to have been the final death blow for the dinosaurs.
So what's really strange about this is, and you've mentioned this earlier, there's all different kinds of dinosaurs, right? Even during the Cretaceous period.
Exactly.
They're different sizes. Some are more warm-blooded than others. They're living all over the world, right?
Uh-huh.
So why would this species be totally eliminated, whereas other very close relatives, other reptiles, not be eliminated?
Well, that's another, you know, tough question that we don't really know the answer to. You know, you can think of it this way, to reframe your question. You can say, how is it that all the dinosaurs go extinct, and yet crocodiles and turtles, many of whom were as big or bigger than small dinosaurs, survived?
Can I reframe it and ask that question?
Yeah, that's the best way to think of it.
Yeah.
And the answer is, good question. I wish I knew the answer to that one. Here's what I would say, and you know, not all paleontologists agree on it, but I think that if you look at the fossil record of dinosaurs approaching the end of the Cretaceous, say during the last 5 million or 10 million years of dinosaur history, 75 to 65 million years ago, dinosaurs look like they're a group in trouble. They're already on their way to extinction. And the explanation of that is probably in, you know, falling sea levels, changing climates, changing vegetation. And so here's this group of animals that's on its way out. And then, like I say, they just had a really bad day. You know, this huge thing hits the Earth. It causes whatever, you know, a dust cloud, acid rain, and it wipes them out. Yet, we don't really understand why they all go and some of these other reptiles survive. And of course, what I like to say is the world is an enormous place. So maybe there are some dinosaurs who actually lived a little beyond the impact, but then they went extinct later. If I were going to look for them, I'd look as far away from the Gulf of Mexico basin as possible. I'd look in Asia, Eastern Asia or something, someplace that was on the other side of the world. But there are still, you know, I guess what I would say to you is this. You can read Time magazine had it on the cover, you know, decades ago that the dinosaurs were killed by an impact. And a lot of people might think, well, heck, we know the answer to that. Research is over. Not true. The question you ask, how did these other reptiles, that needs more research.
So one of the things I've read is, or at least one of the theories espoused, is that dinosaurs are really dumb, that they had a small brain. You know, you could take a big bite out of them and they wouldn't feel it for like 20 or 30 seconds. So they were not as adaptive as, say, other animals, say like mammals, that thank God survived so that, you know, we could come about.
Yeah, well,
what do you think of that theory?
Well, I don't think much of it. I would say, you know, dinosaurs were so dumb that they were on Earth for 150 million years. They were the dominant land animals during that 150 million years. They lived everywhere, and there were everything from chicken-sized little animals who hopped around on tree limbs and ate bugs, all the way up to things bigger than school buses who ate plants, or huge, horrific meat-eaters like T-Rex. So I think that if you think the dinosaurs were dumb, that's not really
so accurate. Homo sapiens, they've only been around about 160,000 years, right?
Yeah, depending on how you cut it. I mean, we haven't been around nearly as long as the dinosaurs.
And so we shouldn't be gloating yet.
No, we're going to have to wait about another 140-some-odd million years before we can sit there and say, yeah, we've been around longer than the dinosaurs. Aren't we smart?
So we're coming to the end of the show, Spencer, and one of the things I want to ask you about, we've talked about three extinction events, and they seem to come about every, say, 50 to 80 million years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 65 million years since the last one. One would like to know what science is saying about the likelihood of yet another extinction event. Do scientists talk about this kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most scientists would agree we're living through a mass extinction right now, mostly caused by us. I mean, you read about it all the time that rainforests are being slashed in the tropical regions, and all sorts of species are going extinct at this point. And I've often said that in 100 million years, if there are paleontologists around, they'll be studying this extinction. This will be the big one.
The extinction we're really concerned about is the one that's going to extinguish us. Is there some thought that that one may happen?
Well, you know, yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean, if we knock off enough of the life on Earth, if we foul our own nest, we may set up our own extinction. There are people who've talked about there's no question that at some point another asteroid or meteorite may hit the Earth. That could have devastating effects. I mean, I've often said, you know, if there are paleontologists around in 50 million years, they may be cockroach paleontologists because there won't be human paleontologists around to study fossils anymore.
So could you just give the address of the New Mexico Museum of History website, or a good way for people to get to that website?
Well, you can go to nmnaturalhistory.org. That's generally the best way to get there. And then we also have a website just on fossils called nmfossils.org.
Well, Spencer Lucas, I want to thank you so much for coming down and being my guest today. I'd also like to thank my producer, John Burgund. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on community-powered radio, KUNM. Podcasts of this and other locally produced shows can be found at KUNM.org.